It's definitely the hardest it's been in a very long time.
The hardest for who?
Oh, I think as a business owner, it's definitely owner. As a business owner, it's definitely harder.
So talk about the business owners. Yeah. Is it hard for the people behind the chair being employed?
You see people, you know, calling themselves an educator or setting something up online or doing a course and inviting all these people along. They can't present. Is that their fault? Probably not. But some of them can't even do hair properly.
I've educated more people than most classroom teachers. Yeah. So I've got no problem with it. Problem is, we do a blank check to colleges, and some of them are great, and some of them are f***ing terrible. Mm.
Hi, welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm Anthony Laban, and we'll be talking to various people in the industry who've made it, and their journey and how they got here. Talking honest, cutting through the crap, and making sure your story and their story is heard to help your business and hopefully mine. If you haven't already, please hit the subscribe button and I hope you enjoy this episode.
Hi there, I'm Anthony Laban. Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. I'm here today in my store. This is the back of one of my walls. I'm here with Dom Lehane from How to Cut It and Phil Collins from Hair Uncut. And we've been wanting to do this for a while because I'm always speaking to people who want to do presenting, want to do podcasting, want to get involved in the other bits of the industry. And I thought, actually, you know, the two of the strongest names I know that work and have worked through. I mean, you are the granddaddy of hair.
All right, hair steady podcasting. On with the granddaddy, all right?
But, you know, I mean, you know, we're newcomers to this. And, you know, you set yours up a good while ago. So that was kind of really, if we can maybe start chatting about that, I think that'd be a really interesting one. I mean, you said, when did you start? 2017?
Yeah. So I the podcasting came into my world in around about 2014. Wow. That was when I discovered podcasting. And it was then that I thought to myself, you know what, I fancy a go at this. And it took me all that time to finally launch it 2017 on Skype.
Wow, well done.
That's just closed down, I see, hasn't it? Skype has just closed down. Yeah. But that's how it was. So seeing the landscape, seeing what you're doing, it's mental how it's just become this massive industry now out there. There isn't a talk show, is there, that you know, every celebrity goes on there and say, I heard you just launched a podcast.
Yeah.
So they're brilliant and it's great. But look, when we first launched podcasts, I had to explain to everybody what is a podcast. Honestly, it just was... Yeah, what is a podcast? I had to explain that. So it was hard, but it was so exciting because I felt kind of out there on my own. And people would say, well, why'd you do it? And I think that probably would be a good reason where we go a little bit today, because I'd probably say to you, why are you doing it?
Yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I think, how did you find getting people on that? Were people quite willing back in 14, 15?
Yeah, they were. It was, to be fair, because we'd built a community then called Hair Club Live. And Phil would know that because he came along to some of our open chair nights that we're doing. So we'd already built up a little bit of connections in the industry. So, and one of them was Tom Connell, who in the hairdressing landscape has, you know, gone on to great things, was with Trevor Sorby. Mm. And yeah, so he was a great start. And I knew a lot of people that I could reach out to. And I think, again, because it was a time before not a lot of people were getting interviewed other than industry magazines, People were like, yeah, this is exciting. Other than that, it was just getting featured in the pages. So, yeah, we started with Tom Connell. Andrew Barton came on, Sophia Hilton. So we had some big hitters. And again, because it was quite new, even Instagram, you were getting a bit of coverage out there on Instagram. That was a great way to market the podcast. So, yeah, it was pretty good. And like I say, people hadn't really had that experience of having audio. Because it was audio, there was no video stuff going on. This was literally Skype and winging it.
Yeah. Which I mean, a lot of people say we should we should have stayed audio, maybe.
Yeah, well, that's exactly it.
I mean, obviously, the podcast explosion and online explosion, kind of COVID was a big part of our industry during that time. And obviously, Hair Uncut came along as
yeah,
COVID, so or was it hatching before? Was it something else?
Before, I mean, we started 6 years ago, and then I think, you know, COVID helped in a weird kind of way, accelerated the kind of number of members and the traction and everything. So, you know, it was for us, it was about you know, trying to create a community, you know, like Dom's done so well, you know, so that you've got this group of hairdressers that can engage with each other, that can share ideas and be a support for each other, really.
Yeah. Yeah. And are you finding that's the way your podcast is carried on? It must be a different beast now, 10 years later.
Yeah, because, look, again, people will always say, I remember Johnny Barbo. I had a conversation with Johnny early on and, you know, why are you doing this, Dom? You know, are you making money from this? Because, let's be honest, you know, our time's valuable. And people will always say, you know, why are you doing it? And for me, I think it was an adaptation of what we were doing. So even at that time, we were still part of the Hair Club Live, and it was an adaptation of that. Eventually, we parted our company. So for me, it's always, you know, at the start of it, insights, inspirations, information, take your hairdressing and barbering careers to the next level. And that's what it's about. I mean, it's about, for me, it's about finding that pathway. Did I look at it and think this could be opportunities? Absolutely, of course. I'm not sitting there as a busy fool. I want to be paid for offering great content, and we should never be shy of that. You know, people are making money from, you know. So, you know, it led us to opportunities, you know, which aren't always the obvious thing that you think of when you start podcasting. But look, had I started now, it'd probably be a different landscape in a much more crowded market. But
well, it's interesting. When we started looking at this, I went back and started hunting out, and there was an absolute explosion of podcasts that started up during that COVID period. And they were really helpful, you know, to keep people in touch, to keep those conversations going, to keep the community going. But like 90% of them stopped fairly soon. And I was saying, Luke here is great at telling me the figures. I think there's now over 2 million podcasts out there, but there's barely 200,000 of them that are actually live and producing
new. But it is a commitment. That's it. And it's like what Phil's done so well. Phil has managed a community where many have just come along with lots of enthusiasm, and they think, tomorrow I'm going to be a superstar, or I'm going to make loads of money from this. That's the biggest lesson for us all, I think, is that commitment, and that's certainly something you've done, and that's something that you see, and consistency as well. You know, we can go into it so full on. But if you don't keep consistent.
Yeah, I think that's it. You found that now 6 years in with Hair Uncut. I mean, that's become quite a different beast than it was. Presumably it kind of changed a little bit during lockdown because of the needs.
Yeah.
And now coming out of it, I guess there must have been a kind of, oh, where does this go now? Now that COVID's over, and you kind of revert back to where you were originally, or has it become something other?
I think it's like you both have said, you know, it was always almost kind of started off as a bit of a hobby. And then you're kind of putting so much in, and you're doing lives, and you're talking to barbers and hairdressers, and you're doing interviews, and, you know, it's a full-time job. And then, you know, your other half sort of says, what are we doing? Because, you know, it needs to find a way to generate some money and to be a business. Yeah. And I think what we then found was that brands were looking at the community, they were seeing how it was engaged, and, you know, we're sharing with hairdressers and barbers all around the world. And the majority of the members are made up from the UK. But I think then it starts to sort of resonate what you can do. But, you know, it's about community. There's a lot of communities out there, but I think it's about making sure that it's safe and people can share their work and share their ideas and talk about the industry.
Yeah, you've been very good at, you know, it's not, you know, there's not an awful lot of attack mode in your world, which is really novel. I think it's really easy from a keyboard to, you know, shout into me being a bull bastard talking about hair. And for you, you know,
what are you talking
for
people about, who, bastard?
But, you know, people that are brave enough to kind of put work out. You know, I've purposely never put work out since we've been doing this. But, you know, but people do put out work, and I always feel really, really upset for them when you see this kind of disparaging kind of comments afterwards.
Yeah, do you know, actually, on that point, what you're talking about, like, we put work out there, so many of us, but everything's wonderful. Everything's great. But surely, there has to be a place as well for honest critique as well. You know, because, but we need to do it in a more managed way. And that's one thing that always resonated with me. And Tom Connell, he talked about critique. And actually, that if you're putting work out, but that comes from the people to manage. And that's what I think with Phil and his strength with Hair Uncut.
Yeah.
He manages his, rather than just a community that people just go and offload spam ads and that. And but if you put your work out there, look, you're going to have to, you got to go with that. And, you know, we need to be told in a constructive way.
I think it's constructive. And I think that's what I've tended to see from Hair Uncut, that it's not just kind of shit throwing. It is, you know, it can still be, you know, criticism can be positive. But no, I think what you're doing there is really interesting. But obviously, I certainly get approached now about having a podcast and running a podcast, and for doing kind of online and the whole social media area. What's your thinking now? You say about me setting mine up now. You must see that competition now is much heavier. You had a fairly open lane when you started.
Yeah, look, honestly, yeah. I mean, it's every week there isn't, but look. The good will last. Mm. You've got to keep going. My point will always be, will you be here in 8 years' time? Mm. Because the thing that I will say about it, you've got to commit. And we all have a reason. And you, for me personally now, I think podcasts, we're overloaded with interviews now. So actually what I like with yours is that there's this more, you've got a uniqueness to what you're doing. But if you're just following everybody for everybody's sake.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do we really need more interviews upon? So there has to be something really authentic. I'm going to be pivoting myself. You know, I've got big plans in doing things different. I think rather than just always being on our lane, but, you know, health permitting, I will be here for another 8 years as I come up to 8 years of doing it because I love what I do. Mm. I love sharing. I like helping people. I like to guide people, you know, whether that's in the barbering industry, whether that's in the hair industry, just people that I regard as hair professionals because that's what we all are. And I think we need that guidance, don't we? So what you're doing, are you actually offering value to people in our industry?
And also what I think is really, really nice about what you guys are doing is that the interviews are they're very frank, they're very honest. You know, you both interview amazing people, but everybody's got a story to tell. And I think that your approach and how you two sort of talk to people and how you both support people and show this strong kind of focus on developing people and nurturing people. And, you know, we all love the industry, you know, it's in our blood. We're in an amazing industry, but I think, you know, you two do such a great job at believing in education and believing in bringing the industry forward. And that's what sets what you
do. But what I would say on that, Phil, and I think you're absolutely spot on, and I'd say that about with Anthony and myself, that actually we're not in this because of it being social me.
Yeah.
Yeah. I think we're in it because we want to actually give back. And that's what makes people will see through the falseness. Yeah. People will connect with people that are genuine. We all do. I connect with genuine people. Yeah. Yeah. And at the back of my mind is not me. I'm not thinking about, well, I'm going to get this deal, I'm going to be famous here. But my mind is actually my listener. I will have, whenever I interview somebody, and there'll be lots of interviews that sometimes I look back on now and I'm that ain't so good. And, you know, I'm the biggest critic of myself, and there's still things there I see has changed. But the biggest thing that I will always say, it's the listener that matters most. And if it's my social media, and I'm no means a social media expert, but I feel sometimes, are we all becoming so focused on our own persona, our own story, which Instagram seems to reward, which is fine.
Yeah.
But actually, where's the meaningful content? So I think if you're a good community builder, a good host, it's the person.
Yeah. I mean, I think that's interesting, though. I mean, I think certainly for, you know, I was just at Barber Bash recently, and the enthusiasm and the energy of people wanting to gain experience, wanting to get in. And, you know, chatting with Luke afterwards, you kind of go, there is this huge kind of landscape, good word, this huge landscape of our industry. What is available? There were kind of guys up on stage who were, you know, kind of, you know, Josh LaMonica, kind of, you know, biggest names in barbering are up cutting. Mm. Slider Cuts is up there. You got these great names that are up there. And then equally you had some younger barbers who are up there for the first time. Mm. So, you know, cutting on stage is a big step.
But the thing about those, Anthony, so I'm just jumping in there, and you just mentioned like Josh, Slider, you know, they're consistent. They are really good.
And masters of the craft,
they are really masters of the craft. I mean, Josh LaMonica, Johnny Barber, these people are top jurors. So they're always educating. And, you know, did they set out on their journey when they started and thought to themselves, you know what, I'm going to be going around the world, you know, in front of thousands of people? Probably not. They probably went out and thought, I'm going to be really good at this.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And it's taken them so long. And I always say, so if you go to the Barber Bash, you go to any industry event, there's a lot of people that just want to be famous for being famous. Yeah. And they feel like I could do a fade cut. Yeah, so can thousands of people do great fade haircuts. But actually, what are you doing that's going to make you really go to that next level? Because at the end of it, they're probably all thinking, I want to be a brand ambassador. I want to be an educator. Yeah. And like, that's where the Holy Grail, isn't it?
Yeah.
But actually, very, very few will ever get there. So, you know, these people are really grounded down on their craft.
Mm. Yeah, no, true. But I mean, there are opportunities out there. And, you know, people do want to get involved with brands. And I know both of you... You know, both of you have spent a large chunk of your careers now working with brands. Mm, mm. On top of, you know, as we spoke about, you know, we've just had London Fashion Week.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you've got, I mean, you know, Modern Barber Mag, Barber Evo. You've got these magazines that are
industry events.
Beautiful, these huge industry events. There's training, you know, live training as well as online. Mm. So there's all these different, this kind of pick and mix has grown kind of massively. You know, and I'm always interested as to, you know, how do you choose which to get involved in? How do you know what's right? How do you know what's the right thing? Because when I came along it, there was not so many. I kind of bumbled into this and I did Fashion Week but I got this and I got that because I was in the right place and I was working with the right people and so on. You know, 90% of the stuff available now wasn't even in existence.
But that's the world, isn't it? That's any industry. Whatever, there'll be careers that are, you know, going to be there in 10 years' time that we're not even known about. Mm. I mean, we talk about social, we talk about all this landscape, you know. What about the meta landscape? What about this, you know, when you look at Apple Vision now? Yeah. So I'm pretty sure that this may all look a bit old hat very soon, you know, as we move into the next thing. So things are always changing. You've got to be at the cusp of that and be prepared for that.
Yeah, and I think it goes back to what the three of us were saying earlier on about the amount of opportunities that the industry brings, you know, as for barbers and for stylists working in salons, whatever. You know, in London Fashion Week is a prime example. I think, you know, we were working with a particular company that asked us to get some stylists and some barbers to support London Fashion Week. And, you know, we didn't get anything out of that. You know, we didn't get paid for that. But the rewards to those individuals and what it meant to some of those barbers and some of those stylists to be working backstage, that was worth doing. You know, we didn't get a penny for that. But, you know, we had all of these beautiful messages from people going, I can't thank you enough. You know, that's what it's about. It's about empowering people. It doesn't matter whether you've got 200 followers or 2 million. It's not about that. And I think, you know... We could talk all day about the kind of approach that brands take, you know, towards people that haven't necessarily got a large following. I think particularly in barbering, but, you know, they can be amazing at doing a fade, but they may not have a million followers. But does that then restrict the opportunities that they may get?
Well, I mean, without dropping you two in it, it'd be interesting what your experience is with brands. And is there a good, a bad, and the ugly for youngsters trying to get or new barbers wanting to get associated with brands? Who needs who the most?
We all need brands. there's no getting away from it. I think brands are brilliant. They keep the industry afloat in lots of ways. We could be very critical of where they're being sold, but we need brands. Brands give us opportunity. Mm. Phil will know. He worked with a leading brand. Mm. And he'll know about the education and the support. So it's a lot more than just a brand ambassador. So you get an opportunity. You get really in with a brand. Yeah, of course, you've got to commit to a brand. Mm. But what you can get from that and the support, I think you need that. Mm. And I think you need brands. There's not one of those names that you've mentioned haven't got a brand supporting them. So it's a bit like a record label. You could be the greatest musician in the world wandering around all the pubs, being the best barber out there, but actually you're getting absolutely nowhere. You're not earning any money. We'll get a brand. A brand will support real talent. Mm. You'll get hijacked, and I think there's a lot of the micro ones that are maybe saying, look, we'll send you some products. But look, if you want those opportunities, you're going to have to sell your soul a little bit. whether we like that or not. And I would say, for me, you know, I work with a leading brand. We do a lot of work alongside brands. And yeah, I've only had positive experiences. Mm. At the end of the day, you could say no.
Yeah.
And also, I think it's a really good point. But I think that when you kind of flip it, and, you know, we sit in certain meetings with marketing brands, and they're talking about MPDs, or they're talking about their campaigns, or they're talking about a shoot, whatever it may be, they need a barber or a hairdresser sitting in that meeting. Because you could be the best marketer, and there's nothing wrong with marketeers, they're amazing, but you could be the best marketeer in the world. But when you're talking about a men's shoe, or you're talking about a men's product, you need a barber in that meeting. And we see that a lot, where you sit in a meeting with global brands, there's not a barber or a stylist in that meeting. That's a huge mistake.
Maybe there's a career pathway there for somebody to be a consultant for these brands.
Yeah.
You know, that I think, again, when you talk about career progression in the barbering industry, what is that career progression? We always look at the obvious. You mentioned an educator working for a brand. Why not be a consultant, you know, who could work and do what Phil said? Present yourself in give yourself a uniqueness. Niche yourself down. I'm the massive fan of niching.
Yeah, I mean, we've certainly seen, you know, what Hayden Cassidy's been doing with Dior is you know, phenomenal. You know, I guess not necessarily new to the hairdressing industry, but certainly new to the barbering industry. And has definitely led, you know, it's definitely added cool to that brand.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, for...
She's just cool, any. Yeah, I mean, which is going
But that
to be.
Association really has made Dior seem cooler.
Yeah.
I mean, look, I think that there is just so many different ways of progression and the cool, and Hayden as well. I'm sure she has brands absolutely all over her because they know that they're going to get in front of it. Look at Josh LaMonica. Huge amount of brands. I'm sure. Have you been approached by brands?
Yeah, we have done, and we've resisted so far.
Why do you resist?
Because I think with the podcast we did last year, which was more, you know, in that kind of straight interview mode. And if I'm honest, I'd got bored by the end of it. So at the end of last year, I'd kind of felt like we'd had 50 conversations. Yeah. I'd met 50 people. All lovely people. I loved every one of them. But I was like, are we just going to repeat this? Because you know, I think if you go into any industry, 50 stories is 50 stories. I think it stops after that. And so, you know, Luke and I were chatting about maybe making more topic-based and having a little bit of, you know, some conversations are more cordial, others are a bit more kind of combative, where we drill down on a topic. And that's really, that I've really enjoyed. And so I think I'm kind of liking the format. I think if I felt that I wanted to have the freedom to see how we took this go with it without a link to a brand, I had to listen to what guests they wanted and what the format was.
But it's like we all do our thing. You said to me, you know, you do your podcast. What is all our outcomes for this? So what is, you know, you're giving up your time and it costs, you know, these things don't just come, you know, cheaply. You've got to pay. Why is it you're doing this?
Yeah, I think when we started, it was very much about wanting to be the kind of anti-Instagram. I felt there were so many young barbers, and I found it in my stores that people were kind of under the impression that a lot of stuff was there and easy, and were getting disappointed when it wasn't happening and that kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And I felt actually that I'd talk to these guys because I knew a lot of these guys, and I knew that it hadn't been a smooth road. I know that they had snow. I've certainly fallen over. I've had businesses go under. Mm. I've messed up. I've got things wrong. I've had to dust myself down. I've had to accept that I was wrong. And everyone I know had the same, but no one, that's not the face you put out on social media. And I just felt as a younger barber coming through, if I was setting up a store now, the kind of pressure was so hard for the expectation. So we set it up then in the beginning, really to kind of debunk some myths.
No, I think that's a great, I love that. Love that.
You know, I think I'd struggle now to open up a store in the way I opened up mine. And I really do. I have great concerns for youngsters getting in and opening up and young businesses beginning. And I felt I had the ability to get a resource of people who would come on and talk to me and talk to these guys, and hopefully everyone will come away with a little snippet of knowledge from it. And no one was doing that. Yeah. There was no one out there. I think initially the idea was that it'd get sponsored, and I feel that's probably something that we're probably heading back towards.
Could, but, what would be the issue there if it was sponsored?
To be honest with you, in the beginnings, the sponsors I was talking, the people I was talking to, I just didn't...
Didn't believe in the brand?
Yeah, I just didn't feel like that. I don't feel they got it, and I didn't feel it was something that I wanted to make. I felt I wanted, if we were going to do this, and quite quickly discovered that this was something I really liked.
Yeah, yeah.
And it seems like, you know, we do seem to have pulled a community together. I think we are really kind of in that kind of wheelhouse.
But that's also another thing, the community of barbering, the culture of barbering. Yeah. Actually, I think the hair industry feel was probably we could learn a lot. But it's just so cool.
Yeah.
Well, it has been so cool. And that real explosion of it. So you kind of fitted in there. But I love that reason that you said anti-Instagram. It was almost like what you're seeing. But you're building now that community.
Yeah,
which is probably the reason.
And I think the podcast is a bit more established in its own right, so I don't feel we'd be pushed around too much by a sponsor, or we'd have to be guidelined too much by a sponsor. I'm an irritating kind of. I don't think I'm a control freak, but I certainly like to be holding the steering wheel. And I think sometimes I felt with us in our early days was the wrong time to have a master. Everyone I spoke to at the time wasn't. And I think, you know, I think I've still got a list of people that I'd quite like to have as sponsors. And if one of those comes through, then I'd be very excited.
You know, I'd say with Phil, you know, as a community, you started it for a reason, but you have to have that business model, surely, in your mind, do you?
Yeah, I think you do. I mean, I think in an ideal world, you'd like to think that you can give up your free time and you can plow sort of money into it with not wanting maybe to create a business out of it. And that would be lovely. But I think it's at the beginning, it almost kind of feels that that's what it was, because you're creating a community. You want to engage with the hairdresser. You want to stand up and say, look, we work in an amazing industry. You want to champion, you know, hairdressers and barbers, and you want to make people feel good. And I think what you've done with the Noble Barber is that you talk about subjects that are very relevant, they're very topical, they're very useful. And as you said, if I'm a young barber and I'm thinking of opening up my own shop, and you listen to some of your podcasts where you've discussed that, and you've discussed, you know, things like P&L, things like staffing, blah, 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 that's so powerful, because it's a learning resource for youngsters. And I think we need more of that. We need much more of that, because let's face it, you know, we can talk all day about different industry subjects within the barbering and the hairdressing industry, but it's very tough. It's very tough out there for many different reasons.
Oh God, no. I mean, I would say everyone I speak to, including my business, is that it's definitely the hardest it's been in a very long time. And I think,
hardest for who?
I think as a business owner, it's definitely owner. As a business owner, it's definitely harder.
So we talk about the business owners.
Mm. Yeah.
Is it hard for the people behind the chair being employed?
Well, that's interesting. I mean, I think it's. I mean, we're certainly seeing the very other end.
You know, because it's all like it here. It's tough, but that's coming from the owners.
Mm.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of people who don't think it's tough.
Well, I think
it's never been a better time to be employed.
At the other end of the scale, you've got these apprentices are struggling to get.
Yeah.
Places.
Yeah.
So, you know, we're top, you know, what we've got is a problem at the top and the bottom, that you've got apprentices that can't find places to work and places to be trained.
Is that really the case? Do you think that is now? Well, do you still think?
I think
it just that we've got so many salons and barbershops on the high street now that, again, I'm not saying like back in the day, but there was a lot fewer shops or barbershops. Yeah. There were a lot fewer hair salons. Mm. So therefore, all we're doing is the demand is far greater for apprentices, because there's so many more places and jobs to fill.
But I don't think that is the case, because, you know, I was speaking to Adam from MFED, who was just saying, you know, he had 12 that wanted to sign up, and he spent 3 days ringing around everyone he could think of and couldn't get anyone to take an apprentice on. And so 12 of them, he had to turn them down.
Why do you think that is, though? Is it cost? Is it the lack of understanding or wanting to educate and bring the youngsters through? I mean, I'm really surprised by that.
I think it's expensive.
Okay.
I think you're finding that barbering is getting a lot more second careers. So you're getting older barbers. You're getting, you know, older apprentices. The changing costings makes it difficult. You know, as your apprenticeship finishes, you're going straight up into... Yeah, you're pushing £25,000, £26,000 a year salary, minimum wage to
But then if you talk to colleges, they'll say that their courses are absolutely, the popularity of barbering courses, full-time barbering courses, are huge.
Mm.
Mm.
Is that what you're up against? Is it that, so the demand of, do they see barbering as an apprenticeship, a two-year apprenticeship? Is that what we're battling against?
Well, I don't know. I mean, I think, unfortunately, I mean, maybe, I mean, I personally think that the colleges are filling the gap with places not taking them on. And I think that's why the college, you know, I know from my point of view.
So were you an apprentice?
Yeah.
How long was your apprenticeship for?
My apprenticeship was 3 years, 2 years, and then a year improver.
Yeah. Right.
But I mean, our apprentices here now are 15 months. So we certainly sped it up.
Right.
Without a doubt. And we try and get, we will get our apprentices working within the year with clients. So we will get them cut, you know, we will get them cutting kids. We will get them cutting cheaper. We will get them colouring.
No, but again, I think, you know,
I'm not used to being an interview.
But you know, I think you've got such a passion for education. And when I've been in any of your spaces, and you're literally, you know, obviously you don't do all of the training because you've got a team of people, but you know, I've seen you take your apprentices through models. Mm. And I think that's you know, I don't know whether you can teach that, but it's in your DNA because of your background, because of your Tony and Guy Sassoon's kind of, you just have this infectious passion for education. Mm. And I think that's lacking in a lot of salon owners. Mm. I really do.
Oh, no, I definitely agree that I think certainly a lot of stores have ballsed it up. And I think there have been, you know, I'm not going to name, but there are certainly some big chain in the hairdressing area. I think there's a lot of big hairdressing chains who've taken on a lot of apprentices and let them down. I think there's a responsibility when you take on a trainee to have some training. And I think the badly trained assistants coming out of some of the big chains and some of the independents is woeful. Mm. And that's one of the things that I think is a real problem with the way colleges work, local councils
work.
So
how do we fix that then? Because this is, you know, we hear these things and I don't think it's a conversation that I haven't heard before. It's quite a regular conversation. But what are we going to do about it?
Well, I think if I was being funded, if I was getting the £9,000, and I've done this in a podcast recently, if I was getting the £9,000 that the government are already spending, so I'm not after any more money, I'm not looking for Rachel Reeves to put taxes up again and charge us. I'm just saying there's £9,000 being spent. Now, if I'm a store that is willing to take my apprentices seriously, as I am, I should get that £9,000. And out of that £9,000, I would pay City and Guilds to come in and they would do my EPA.
Yeah.
And I wouldn't need to certificate. I would get outside sources to come in and certificate. Mm. Now, if I'm not wanting to do that, then I could leave that to the colleges and that £9,000 still spent. Now, if I'm getting £9,000 from the government, I would assume that I would be watched, I would be checked, I would have to put in forms, I would have to pass red tape, I would have to liaise with local council, I would have to work with the education service.
Mm.
I mean, the only time I deal with the education service is when we do a week work experience. Right. And then all of a sudden I meet the careers officers and I meet all these different people, you know, and that's the only time I have it. I'd talk to the education department. I've got no issue with that. I've educated more people than most classroom teachers.
Yeah.
So I've got no problem with it. Problem is we do a blank check to colleges and some of them are great and some of them are fucking terrible.
Mm.
We allow youngsters to come out of school and go into salons, and some of them are great, and some of them are fucking terrible, and that's the problem. And I just think I don't think you need to rewrite the manual. I just think you need to put the legislation that's there in the right hands. And I think as stores, if we were being paid directly by the government for our trainees, that's an incentive to take it seriously. Yeah, you guys, I know I take a job more seriously if I like the paycheck. You know, if I'm being asked to do something and I've got a job that I really don't fancy, but there's a good enough check at the back of it, then I'll get up early and I'll go and do that job.
Yep.
Yeah.
And I just think we're expecting hair and barbers to do all the training for none of the work. And we all know at the end of the day, there's nothing to stop our apprentices that we've put all that love and sweat into walking down the road and starting again. And yeah. we've done all of that for nothing. And I think that's the problem. You know, if you stack a deck the wrong way, someone loses. And I think, you know, we've been trying to play Find the Lady for the last decade and a half. And it's coming home to roost.
No,
you know,
nobody absolutely. And you can hear that passion in your voice. And I think every barbershop owner, shop owner would feel exactly the same. So, but there has to be something there. I know we've got to, you're looking to governments, you're looking at training providers, awarding bodies, all these, but there's got to be something. There's got to be an answer here. There has to be. There has to be. That, you know, we're not trying to fly people to the moon or to Mars. You know, we're talking about getting apprenticeships back in fashion for young people to come back
I think
in.
The young people that we meet and our apprentices, I mean, hey, you know, we have a lady that's just joined us, Courtney, who is genuinely, I've been doing this game a long time, best assistant I've ever met.
Wow.
Best assistant I've ever met. I couldn't have met a better employee if I tried.
Right.
Yeah, we have Ruby, who's just coming to the end of her her apprenticeship.
Yeah.
Phenomenal.
What makes them so good?
They work with me. I think I've said this many times. I think, you know, a life without passion isn't a life. And I think I'm very keen that you get the gist of our industry. You know, we were up early on Sunday morning to go to Barber Bash, and we were sitting in the car in traffic, and we got there and we were surrounded by positivity and energy. And I'm still really passionate about that. I love doing a haircut with a new apprentice or a hairdresser or a barber that's been working with us a long time. I love sharing that knowledge. I love seeing other guys around me doing amazing work and me having a nosy what they're up to.
So, do you get out there and actually get into colleges, schools, wherever these young people are, and share this passion? Obviously, you do it through your podcast and through Instagram, but you know, listening to you, I mean, you.
Unfortunately, I have said this before about colleges. We've not been successful with our local colleges. Have you? Do you? Do you engage?
Do you know, it is something I'm actually engaging in now.
Because
Northamptonshire. I've been involved with Northampton College, Further Education College.
Because
I was an employer, so I had a salon. At one time I had around about 7 apprentices, and they were good. Look, there's good and bad in
I'm not disagreeing with that.
And I feel like there's a lot of them. I mean, I would shout out West Sussex College. You know, they have Joe Doward, who is such an ambassador for the industry.
Yeah,
I just think that there are some people that are very washed up and maybe frustrated by the whole awarding body system, because I think most people will go into the education at colleges with passion and actually want to do well. And they think like they can bring in something, but then they quickly realize that they can't. However, we can maybe, I think, as a voice between people, we're an old guard, you know, we're not sitting here as 20-year-olds, but, you know, I think we're forward thinking enough. I think we're relevant enough to actually know the industry and to, we have got to be really responsible with that. And I think whether that college is not forward thinking, be more creative. Why rely on a college then? Why not go and get a boozer, book sync out, take your podcast and get in there and talk to them? Mm. Why are we relying? And then...
Well, I mean, you come from a Tony and Guy background. So you've gone through the whole training process and, you know, the amount of barbers, you know, hey, and big name barbers now that have come through the Tony and Guy training scheme. You know, it's Tony, and I come through a, you know, more Sassoon's route. But, you know, very strong training systems that as an apprentice, when you joined Sassoon's or you joined Tony and Guy, there's a route to the end. There's a kind of, you've kind of, you know, you've got your start point, you can see the end point, and you can see what's going on in between. Why is that gone? You know what I mean? Is Tony and Guy still operating like that? Is that still the way it runs?
Yeah, I think they are. I mean, I think, you know, I started at Sassoon's, you know, obviously like yourself. Sure. And I was lucky enough, my grandparents paid me to do a 10-month diploma course. And then after Sassoon's, I went to Tony and Guy and really probably polished my craft and, you know, working with Anthony Muscolo, you know, who's a legend, which is used very loosely nowadays, is legend kind of terminology. But I think...
Well deserved, though, I think.
You know, Yeah, absolutely. Mm. But I think, you know, it's they had a structure. I think there's so many people within our industry that you know, hold, you know, they almost like they need to thank Tony and Guy or Anthony or whoever, because without the structure, that the belief in education, they wouldn't be where they are today. And I think, you know, Tony and Guy is an example of a few that have just given a career to so many people. But I think we've lost sight of what it needs to be a really strong barber or a really strong hairdresser. And I think, you know, the life skills that we all were taught, and it's not just about doing hair, it's not just about fade, or it's not just about, you know, but we all communicate. You guys are brilliant presenters. You guys stand up, you deliver. You know, Dom, you do all these events with Weller and all these companies. But, you know, it's such a skill. And now I think that's lost. You see people, you know, calling themselves an educator or setting something up online or doing a course and inviting all these people along. They can't present. You know, is that their fault? You know what? Probably not. But I just think it's awash with people that like to think they're an educator, or they like to think they're an influencer. But in the reality, some of them can't even do hair properly. Mm. You know, you have a following, and that's where brands, I think, can also have a negative effect, because there are brands out there categorically at the moment that partner with people due to the number of followers they have. It's not about whether or not they can do beautiful hair or a beautiful fade. That's not right, surely.
No, agreed. I think there'll be a lot of smaller brands who don't have the marketing budget.
Yeah.
I think the bigger brands, they can be a lot more picky and choosy. You know that again.
Yeah.
Working for big brands, they have to pick. And they will treat people right. It won't be, you know, go and just share our product. They're proper ambassadors. They're proper part of that.
Yeah.
Smaller brands will do that.
Yeah.
And they will hijack them.
Yeah.
Because it's cheap marketing.
Exactly.
Let's be totally honest.
And I think, you know, there's a lot of different mixed messages. You know, if an industry expert walks into Boots and talks about mass brands and how amazing they are, and they're the same as products that you buy in a salon and colours the same, that's bollocks. Mm. It's absolute bollocks. Don't care what anybody says.
But I think I might know who you're talking about.
Yeah, now. I think so. It's in Take That. But, you know, there's people that watch that, you know, why would you say that? Why would you say that?
Because it's their own agenda.
A lot of money.
It's their own agenda.
Yeah, but that's mixed messages.
You either have to know who you are, Phil. I guess you know, if you're going to be either consumer, if you're consumer facing as an ambassador, that's fine. And
absolutely.
And you need your consumer facing industry names, because that helps our industry.
Yeah.
But if you're trying to do industry and consumer, then I think the two clash. So I think you've either got to be industry or consumer.
100%. But, you know, I was in a salon the other day, and one of the apprentices, she was like a third year, nearly qualifying. She did a beautiful, beautiful graduated bob on a mannequin. And she'd failed her maths because she didn't understand. It was about fractions. I mean, to be honest, I didn't even understand the question. But, you know, this person could cut hair. It was absolutely beautiful. But it was like, oh, no, tick, not a tick across. You failed because of your fractions. Surely there needs to be a little bit more kind of, you know, more of a structure that works for everybody. We all learn in different ways, and I think that's more apparent now than ever. And I just think that there's a lot of mixed messages coming from education in terms of educating barbers, educating stylists and salons, and what the career path is, I think.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's the problem, is that the career path is so wide. I think that before you've even got to enjoy the moment, you're having to make choices about what and where and how. And if you are doing interesting stuff and you're getting a following, then you are approached by brands. Mm. And that's quite tough to turn down when you're at the start
flattering.
Of your career. And
it's flattering. Very flattering. It's flattering to get noticed.
Yeah, and I think that enjoyment starts disappearing, I guess.
Yeah, but at the end of the day, if we're talking about apprentices and getting a shortage of apprentices or shortage of places taking them on, but as an industry, we have to show that. Mm. There has to be that. There has to be opportunities for people to think, I want to do that.
Mm.
That's not bad. That's not a bad thing.
I know. I think it's fantastic.
You know, if someone's going to get a load of free products, but I think brands have to be, because ultimately that's what it's going to be. Yeah. Most are not going to become rich unless you become a key ambassador for a big brand. And I'm talking global. You're not going to make much money.
No.
And that's fine. But if you get some free products and exposure and a little bit of a different pathway or sidestep to always being behind chair. I know, you know, being behind the chair can be quite mundane, seven days a week, all day long. It drains your head. It drains. Yeah. So I think sometimes to keep it fresh or keep it relevant, we need just some little other things. And if it means you're creating some content for a brand, and then that maybe just keeps us a bit more connected and engaged in what we're doing. Makes us, like you're doing with your podcast, Anthony, like you do with your community, like I do with my podcast. It's just having those other little things keeps it interesting.
Well, I think, I mean, you know, I see that there's a lot of action groups starting to appear in the hair industry, certainly as the... Yeah, I hear there's a March for Freedom on the 17th of March on Parliament Square, which is the voices coming together, I think. You know, we've spoken, I've spoken to what's going to be Skills England about the apprentices, and I'm hoping that we can make some changes there. We've had good conversations with a bunch of barbers, jumped on a call with iFate to see if we can start some conversations. And I think there's definitely an understanding amongst what's going to now be Skills England that there needs to be some changes. I just think that as an industry, we need to have something that sorts the wheat from the chaff and makes that if you're going to take on apprentices, we should be applauded for it because it is a commitment. Mm. And I think the reward needs to come into the store as well as to the apprentice. I love passing on information, and I will stop and give any information. I will try and help. Mm. I will always go. And I have a great passion for it. I am still behind the chair a lot.
But you need that financial support.
But there needs to be a financial reward for it because you find me a company that does it for nothing. Everyone's doing it for something. And from my point of view, I just feel that our people come to work and they work really hard and we need to reward them. But as an owner and as a company, we're still coming to work and we need to be rewarded. And I'm a business owner, but hey, I don't know when I stop becoming a worker.
How much time do you have to give up for your training, you personally? So actually where you come away from the chair... And do you have like a training day?
Yeah, it turns out to be about a day a week, but I split that over 4 2-hour shifts.
So that, you know, that's expensive time.
That's a day with me. Mm. So that's a biggie. And then, yeah, this takes up up time. So you do have to split yourself.
Yeah.
And I'm quite game for that. And I think when I believe in something, as I do with this, I'm very game to be involved. And certainly now as I am with apprentices and how I'm finding myself getting more involved and into that aspect of it. Mm. I think that, but you know, at my soul, I'm a business owner. And as a business owner, I'm very aware we need to be rewarded. And I think at the moment, I think business owners have a really tough time. We're trying to make sure that self-employed people can work safely, that the government aren't going to come and take us away, that's not going, that the chair, we're trying to keep chair renters happy and safe. Yeah. And so they want to stay with us and that's not easy. And then you're trying to pay your overhead.
People? So like, because again, it comes back to this self-employed and I'm not going down there. It's good and bad in whatever way.
Yeah, absolutely.
But you know, not years ago, you would probably work in a barbershop and you would work through the years. Think, one day I'm going to own my own barbershop. But they're now hearing this kind of repeated message, you know, it doesn't sound great to own a shop anymore. Mm. So are we just encouraging them then to go self-employed? Because they would have been traditionally more people that would want to. Why would you want to open a business now when I hear so much of this noise?
Yeah.
I wouldn't.
No.
Yeah. No, I agree.
Right. So I'm going to be self-employed. I'm going to work for myself.
I think it will caterpillar in that respect.
But what we have to is so be careful with the messaging.
Well, I think but the only way I see it going if it continues down this road is, you know, it's fine that, I'm just going to chair rent, but eventually it's just not going to be worth business owners to pay the overhead to have this building filled with chair renters. So you're then going to see a birth of studios. And so you'll see some of these guys working for themselves out of a studio and then their mate will join them.
Yeah,
and then all of a sudden they become business owners.
Exactly.
You know, the whole thing rolls around. I mean, my view is that really that things can be changed. Mm. But I really believe it starts with with education. I think it starts with our apprentices. It comes back to bringing in a passion from owners that they own their stores for a reason. And I don't own my stores. I know if I was self-employed and I was doing other jobs and I was doing other things, I'd make a living. And there have certainly been times owning stores where I've had months where I'm looking at it going, yeah, I'm going to have to wait a few weeks for my wages so that wages go out on time.
Do you make a good living?
Yeah. But, you know, I've,
that needs to be applauded. Because, again, we don't talk about the money, do we?
There are certainly times with business ownership that I've kind of thought, why am I doing this? There has got to be an easier way. Yeah. Because, you know, you do as a business owner, and you see it in so many, not just our industry, but, you know, business owner comes last.
Yeah, you know.
And I think certainly when you're growing a business, and from my company's viewpoint, where we're growing talent, we're wanting people to be the best they can be. That's that I see my job as an owner is to improve people's worlds.
Mm. And that's what a legacy that is.
And that's really important. I love that we've got hairdressers out there and barbers out there that I've trained and have a really good mindset because they work with me. Mm. And I really like that. I like the approach we take as a company, and that's what keeps me going. But I don't think it's probably the easiest way to make a living, if I'm really honest.
No, but you know, it's okay to talk because people, it's tough out there. It's tough. Do you make a decent living?
Yeah. Oh, no, and it's definitely better than work.
Because if you don't, we need to get out. No. If it's not right, is it? You can't just be doing a business for the sake of everybody. You know, you go into business to make money.
Oh, God, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, that's okay. And there's no problem with that at all, of course. And, you know, we make sure our staff are rewarded for their work. And I think all of that's really important. We all do it for the dollar. There's no reason we're not.
I think we'd all pay our staff huge amounts of money, really.
But you could do your mindset. I think the mindset and why you do it is a different, you know, is not, I don't think that my monthly wage is my motivator anymore.
No.
My monthly wage is coming in and that's what I earn.
Yeah.
And that's that. Mm. I think I'm, you know, now my kids have left university and I'm an old git, so you know my ambitions don't come from a financial point of view. They're coming much more for what have I done for 40 years in this industry.
So being a barber salon owner, a barbershop owner, has set you up pretty good now in your life.
Oh God, yeah. I would every time I speak to anyone about coming into it, I would say absolutely 100%.
That's good then, isn't it?
It definitely beats working for a living. It's really lovely. Yeah. I enjoy it. And there's not been a point where I felt seriously about giving it up.
No.
I've met people, and I've got a guy that's joined us recently who gave it up and he knew it wasn't right for him. He's thoroughly loving getting back into the industry and finding himself working with hair again. So no, it's definitely a good thing. What I'm more concerned about is, like I say, my big concern is about, you know, young people setting up barbershops, new business owners, that they're not being led down a garden path. My first lease I signed was atrocious. I would always, I'm always happy if people are setting up businesses for them to reach out and talk to me. And many do, which is amazing. Mm. And with youngsters trying to get in, I would get more or less every day half a dozen messages from guys that opens with, I really want to get into barbering. Have you got any advice how to?
Yeah.
So there's a great, great role out there. I really love it. And I think that's probably why I'm doing this, I think, at the moment.
Very good you are, too. and I think, that comes through, doesn't it, Phil? I think
your
passion for what you believe and stand for is so authentic. It's wonderful. But that needs to be on a massive level. Your voice and what you can now bring together it could be really powerful for the barbering industry from an apprentice's point of view, because that's where your passion really lies. You can hear that.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad I've got some jobs to do for the rest of the year.
I think that
definitely feels like the right time to finish this part one of the episode on that bombshell. I guess the one message that knocks around my head from the end of that is, you know, we spoke about brand ambassadors and people working with brands. Mm. Yeah, it'd be really interesting for colleges to start having ambassadors. Mm. And I think that would be a really exciting place that if you're looking at a college that, you know, Hayden Cassidy is involved in, or Johnny Barber's involved in, or I'm involved in, and there are those big names that are there by association. That gives it credibility. If nothing else, at the point where your ambassador turns around and goes, this is a shit college, I'm leaving, and walks away. That is a very big, that is a very big scar to leave behind. So, sorry, that was a bit loud. Sorry, Luke.
Is that your clapperboard?
That feels like the end. Thank you.
There.
On that big loud bang, thank you very much. Really appreciate it. We've been the Noble Barber. See you again soon. Welcome to the Noble Barber Podcast. We're always looking for interesting people and interesting stories. If you know someone or you are someone with a great story that you want to share, get in touch and come join me on the sofa. Thanks very much for listening. I hope you've enjoyed the episode and we'll see you next time.